This is the Cool Kids Club Podcast, Episode 9. Today we're going to talk about Gundam Unicorn, Episode 2, and some other stuff. With me on this podcast are Beam and Josh.
Yo.
Mendenso Tenko. Tenku. I guess he's not here. John Jones.
Okay. Hey.
And Zionic Freak.
Yo.
And possibly Dark Lord Vitor.
Vitor's coming right now.
Oh, he's there here. He is. All right, well, we just started, so you didn't miss anything. So today, many of you watched Gundam Unicorn Episode 2. And
did.
This episode came out like in the middle of last year, I want to say. It's called, and the Japanese title is called The Red Comet, and the English title is The Second Coming of Char. And in this episode, we are introduced to Full Frontal, and Angelo Salper and a bunch of the other Neo Zeon guys. And we get, and Najra is taken by the Neo Zeon forces after fighting Marita and Unicorn shutting down.
Just a warning to our listeners, if you haven't listened to it yet, if you haven't seen episode 2 yet, you should watch it before you listen any further.
Yes.
Because we're all about spoiling this.
Yeah, we're going to spoil it for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, Benatra is taken by the Neo Zeon forces and basically imprisoned, but it's not... I mean, they treat him pretty damn well. Like, they have him come over to Gilboa's house and have dinner with his family and stuff, so...
And tea time.
And so it's not so much of an imprisonment as they are just kind of like... I don't know.
Be our guest.
There's a strong contrast between how Neo Zeon treats Benajer and how the crew of Nail Argama treats Audrey, and so far that it, as soon as they realize who she is, they immediately use her as a hostage, which I thought was pretty. That's pretty typical Federation stuff, right there.
And they almost kill her anyway, even after they don't get anything, you know.
The negotiations between Full Frontal and Daguza are pretty cool. I like that part of the episode a lot. And I also like Full Frontal talking to Benajer. And without getting into other things that happen in other Gundam series, I'd say that it is very highly unlikely that that's actually Char. But if it isn't Char, then who is it? And it's just something we don't know yet, but we see that he looks exactly like him. He has a scar and everything. So,
yeah, that kind of threw me off too, but I had to look this up before we started the podcast, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's information online, so.
From the novels.
Yes, spoilers are very easily obtained if you don't want to wait, but I wouldn't suggest that.
Yeah, you shouldn't spoil it yourself on it. It might unravel differently in the anime than in the novels anyway. So,
indeed. So at the end of this episode, Echolus, which is a new Federation Special Task Force, kind of like Londo Bell, but I imagine a lot smaller and a lot more special. It's kind of like the Navy SEALs of the
Federation military. Or Londo Bell, yeah.
So Equus launches an operation to retrieve Benajer and the Unicorn Gunman from the Neo Zeon asteroid. And there's not a whole lot of fighting in this one. The only real fights occur at the very beginning when Benajer is engaged with Marita and the Kshatriya. And it's a pretty good fight, but most of the rest of the episode is a lot of introducing more characters and establishing, you know, the political reality of the Universal Century at this time. And the guy from Anaheim who's on the Nail Argama, whose name I can't even recall right now.
The fat guy, you mean?
Yeah, the fat guy.
Okay.
I thought he was pretty funny in that he basically just... It seems like he's just there to get in the way, you know, of everything on the ship running smoothly. But then it turns out that he's the one responsible for getting Benajer back in the Unicorn Gundam. I thought that was pretty funny that he kind of served like an amazingly good purpose in the end. And I guess we'll find out more about him and what Anaheim's people in this.
Lotus Star, yeah.
Just trying to cover their ass because they built all this stuff, of course. If you've never seen some of the earlier Gundam series, like Gundam 0083, Anaheim is a corporation that makes mobile suits for both sides of the battles, and they created the Unicorn Gundam and also the Sinanju and all of Neo Zeon suits. And they're probably responsible for designing almost all the Federation suits too. So it's there's always a tricky balance when they're involved because it's not like they're neutral because they're a third party and they're supporting both sides simultaneously. So
and both sides who have money that can support them for mobile suit design and everything. So
yeah, so it's pretty complicated whenever Anaheim is involved.
At what point does the Earth Federation set up their own Gundam manufacturing division? I can't remember what it's called, but they have it in like Victory Gundam and SNRI. That's right. Is that around by this point?
Oh yeah.
At some point between now and Gundam F91 is when they.
Okay.
But
that doesn't exist yet.
No.
Okay, so it's all still Anaheim.
From what I've read, there may be some hints at the formation of this at some point in the series, or a predecessor like organization to that that may be revealed later on. Something I've read about inadvertently. It's not as though I wish to spoil myself about these kinds of things. It just, like I said last week, it just happens. You can't avoid them. So there may be something about that later on.
Yeah.
So you kind of want to go through the episodes, like just kind of with moments and stuff, because I got a whole list of stuff we can talk about.
Please do.
More stuff than what was last week. All right. The show starts out with basically it starts off from what where episode one ended. And we're basically Benajer. This week I can actually say names.
Benajer instead of Bernard.
Yeah. I actually wrote that name, so I'm more prepared and I'm a little bit more sober. So
nice.
I can do this right.
I appreciate it.
I had to step it up on my end. Alright, so the beginning of the episode starts with the battle between Benajer and Marita. Mm-hmm. And they're having their mobile suit fight. Of course, he turns into the Psycho Frame version of the Gundam Unicorn. And they have a sweet battle. And apparently, I guess all the kids that survived the class from the first episode, they all happen to know that he's in a Gundam, and they give this whole little mini backstory, kind of like in typical anime. It's like, oh, that machine does this and this and this and this and this. So that's the Gundam from the famous 1 year war and blah 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 blah. And it's just like, you kids paid attention in class very well to a teacher that you didn't care about much.
So, I guess everyone knows that much about the 1 year war.
I think there was just that one kid that's with him and Mikot that actually cared about that stuff.
Yeah, Takuya. He's the one that recognized when they were in the Nail Argama's hangar. He was the one that recognized that the Delta Plus is a successor to the Hyakushiki. If you have the volume cranked up when they are floating around in that hangar, you can see points to it and says, "Look, it's the Hyakushiki." So that was that was pretty rad.
That was later in the episode, but and then of course we're after the battle we're introduced to the ship captain, which I can't think of his name right now. I know I'm supposed to be good with names.
He's barely been in this show, so I can't remember his name either.
But we get to get introduced to a new character called Lieutenant Angelo, which is basically, we find out, is Char's, little whiny assistant, which he needs a good beating the crap out of every 5 minutes, it seems like, especially when, Full Frontal invites a guest over to his, temporary palace of a pad that he has. Hmm. And that character got pretty annoying pretty fast. Yeah, we'll go into that in just a second. But,
he's really annoying.
So anyways, we get introduced to Lieutenant Angelo, who's basically thinks he's, hot crap and everything. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we get to see Full Frontal, which is basically a blonde-haired Billy Ray Cyrus from the 90s. If you remember what Billy Ray Cyrus looked like with that long, nasty mullet, this is Full Frontal with long, nasty blonde mullet. So
I think it looks pretty good.
Cool. It's I gotta say it's rad, but
Yeah, I like
part of me is like, that's cool, but at the same time, it's like, man, it's not going to take long to get a haircut.
If I could have hair like that, I would. So I'm not going to knock it. I mean, I think it's awesome.
I guess him and the purple hair chick is the same kind of hair conditioning. Keep the hair yeah. good. So they go to the same store.
I love the hair in this show. I know I mentioned that before, but
Mikot has beautiful hair.
Hair design's great.
Yeah, Mikot has probably one of the best anime hair designs ever. That is like still, you know, semi-realistic, you know, that someone could, you know, could plausibly have hair like that.
It's just poofed up hair dyed purple, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It's still all poofy and fluffy and nice looking to look at.
In 80s, yes.
And completely 80s. That's the most important part.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, after that, we get a scene of Benazir's past, where basically he's got this one little, like half of... Yeah, what was it? Some sort of eye reticle or something on his... And he's...
Yeah,
I'm not sure
what was
going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some kind of testing device. I don't know what.
Yeah, it... And you figured it was going to go more into detail with that, but it just kind of, like, stopped after a minute or so.
I hope they will later on. I'm sure they will.
I'm sure they will. But then we get it. But apparently, we get introduced to the some of the Federation soldiers on the ship, which is the called the Nagel Argima,
Nail Argima,
Nail Argima. Okay,
it's the ship from Double Zeta Gundam. If you have forgotten, right?
Okay, it's been a while since I've seen Double Zeta, so
yeah, it's that ship.
We get introduced to some Federation pilots. We get introduced to the captain of the ship, and then some of the you know, the people who work on the ship too, shipmates and everything. And we get introduced to basically a guy who looks like Guile from Street Fighter, except with darker hair and a mohawk. So we got Colonel William Guile for the Federation.
I did not make that connection between him and Guile.
Dude, his chin is so distinct and bulky. I couldn't help but to make that just instantly.
I guess so. He's pretty badass, though. He's one of the really cool Federation guys that come around once in a while. Kind of like, what's his name? God, I can't think of it. He was in First Gundam. He was blonde.
Slager?
Slager, yes. He reminds me of Slager.
Slager was except, awesome.
Except somewhat more professional. But he's kind of ruthless and, like, you know, really committed like that.
Yeah,
and
he says that's pretty awesome. He says he might I can't remember his name, Benazir. That Benazir might have capital punishment for stealing the unicorn.
Yeah, that would not be too unthinkable. That's happened in certain cases in the Earth Federation before. I don't know if you remember in 0083 that they executed Captain Synapse after the end of everything that had happened. So
I forgot Synapse's cap was. Killed for that, or
yeah,
I guess
the Federation does not fuck around with stuff like that. I mean, get the impression from other Gundam series that like these kids constantly get in the like hangar and steal mobile suits and stuff, and everyone's like really lenient and they always like keep them on ship anyway.
Yeah.
But actually, they can be pretty serious about stuff sometimes.
I mean, it's like basically the you know the kid takes a Gundam and wipes out 20 Zakus, and of course they get a slap on the wrist and a few punches in the face. But and then after that, they're like, all right, well, you need to be a pilot, so we'll figure this out somehow. And I know in 0083, that you know, Iraqi was basically demoted down to ensign, and of course had to serve like you know time
manual
and
labor, yeah,
manual labor for like a couple of months or something. Mm-hmm. And again, it wasn't his fault because again, he was under the orders of Captain Synapse, so Synapse had the biggest part of that deal, which was basically death. So
yeah.
Even though he completely tried his best to save humanity and everything.
Yeah, I think it's not fair.
Well,
that's just how military, punishment penal system is.
You gotta go back to the book, but then again, a man's got to do what a man's got to do. So give Snops credit on that.
I think they're like the main exception to them being really strict is just Amuro, isn't it? I mean,
I guess. Mainly just because they relied on him, and new types were not well known at that time.
Camille and Judo did the same thing, but that was for Ayug, which is obviously different.
Yeah,
that was a rebel resistance, so their corporal punishment was like next to nil, somewhat.
Yeah.
Unless you had to really screw up.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The thing in Zeta and Double Zeta is that wasn't actually in their Federation. I sometimes forget about that.
But Amuro, you know, he becomes national hero or whatever, you know?
Kind of.
He also kind of got his mansion.
Yeah, Solidary and after the war and everything, because I guess he was too much of a dangerous and new type once they confirmed that. So, like, they've always monitored him and everything, so his life was not too peachy after the war, apparently.
Yeah, even after all he did, they did not trust him, and they were still fearful of his abilities, so they kept him under lock and key.
Yeah, but that wasn't because he stole the suit, though.
No, but it was, yeah, you're right. It was because they were afraid of him, mostly. Yeah. I think.
Anyway, let's get back to Unicorn.
Okay.
Okay.
We were talking about Dogs,
Right. So basically they're trying to get Menagerie out of the Unicorn, but they don't know who's in there at first. And then once they actually hack the door after, a period of time, they find out that it is him, which is where we got into the discussion of the capital punishment and everything.
Right.
We then get made up we meet up with our blonde haired pretty boy from the first episode, which is his name's Riddy.
Mm-hmm.
Who basically tries to make, I guess he thinks the Audrey is some sort of pop singer or looks like one. And I guess he's trying to hit on her, but then at the same time he's like, hey, wanna just go check out the Gundam? And then like the other two kids, they're like, oh man, I wanna go too, and he's just like, aw, my thunder's gone. He's like, thanks. He's like, great, now it's a babysitting job.
Yeah.
But anyways, that doesn't last for too long. And so then apparently
his colleague wanted to go too. The other officer.
Oh, that's right, the girl one. I remember that.
The one that looks like Mirai.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, I don't know about her, but I wonder if she's related in some way.
Yeah, with this series, you can never tell, so it could be.
Mirai has kids, hasn't she?
Yeah, but they're not that old at that time.
Yeah, they're still like in grade school, I think.
Yes.
Wasn't there some guy on the ship that looked like Ryu? Or Ben?
Not that I remember, but maybe.
I don't recall.
Oh.
Some minor character that never talks?
No, he talked for like one line or two.
Oh. Sorry, I don't remember.
Oh.
I didn't notice it.
I was going
to
get on.
He's taking Audrey over to the hangar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, that's at the so when they take him over to the hangar, that's at the time when they actually open up the hangar and they find out it's Behringer, and they're all freaked out.
Uh-huh.
That it was him that piloted it. And then eventually some dialogue later we get to where Neon, apparently what tipped off the ship for Neo Zeon to find the location was the fact that there was a decoy of, I guess it was like another Argama ship that they found, and the captain was just like, oh, we need to go out and get some notable suits, and they had his second command girl who like looks like a man with boobs, but she seemed actually pretty cool as a character, but she was like, oh, so you want to send out the mobile suits you just recalled? He's like, screw it, just shoot at it, I don't care, we gotta go like now.
I wonder if that's who Josh was talking about, that really butch chick on the nail art.
Yeah, it was the butch chick. It was like, it's no personality. She's like, sir, you just recall the mobile suits. Do you really want to send them out? And it's just like, F it. All right, we'll just blast to hell. I don't care what it is. And then the Neon Zeon is like, oh, okay, they fell for it. And we know where they are. So then we get introduced to the Neo Zeon attack on the ship with full frontal. Mm-hmm. And he's in his Shinjaku.
Sinanju.
God.
I know. These names come from like Hindu mythology and like Persian like historical figures and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, Japan like just picks a word out of like any foreign dictionary and it's like, I think we're pronouncing it good. That's the name of our mobile suit. That's the name of our character.
Exactly. You
know, most of anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah. In Igloo, I remember there was one that was like a Norse god or something like that. It was really
The Dolphin,
the tank Zaku mobile suit. mm-hmm. tank.
That thing was fucking awesome.
Yeah. And the guy who piloted it was just like completely doped up on like LSD and pain right. pill. Yes, whatever was one of those little Tic Tacs.
Yeah, methamphetamines, I assume. But
I don't know. He got the job done. So.
Oh yeah.
But that's not in Gundam Unicorn at all.
No.
For our viewers, you know, just to make sure we don't screw them up on timelines.
No, but you should watch that. It's pretty entertaining.
Yes. I enjoyed both Unicorns. I mean, the first one takes place, you know, looks at the Zeon side, and the second one takes a look at the Federation side.
Igloo.
Yeah. So while Neo-Zeon's attacking with full frontal, apparently our Anaheim Electronics fatty is basically stating that he gives the whole history of how they got the mobile suit, which is basically like 2 years ago, Neo-Zeon went to the laboratory and hijacked the thing and left, and which was the original Sazabi.
Right.
And basically they used that, and again they basically upgraded it to what we see on this episode. And apparently, yeah, but actually there's, I don't want to get ahead of myself there. Okay, so they have this, so again, we have like it's about a, what, 10-minute, 15-minute MS battle, it looks like.
I don't know.
So that was the other part of the battle. It was long enough, I think. It was really good.
Yes.
And of course, go ahead.
The Riddy was piloting the Rezo during that, and I remember I think like three of them took off from the launch deck at once, and then one of them got destroyed. Like the commander's one got destroyed almost immediately. That's how it goes. That's how war. Yeah,
that is war. Huh. But the battle, you get apparently the commander of the mobile suit team or whatever. He buys it when he has a, you know, one on one battle with the. You're good with names, Chris.
Angela?
No, that was in the battle. Angela was like on the sidelines. He's like, we don't want to interfere with, you know, full frontal's thing. We're just only going to get in the way. We're just going to stand on the side and, you know, completely puss out and do nothing the entire time.
Right.
How dare we step in his battlefield? I'm like, dude, just shut up.
Then when he does, he gets angry. He's like, I have had to interfere with full frontal's record or whatever he's saying. Right.
He starts like, oh man, I'm not worthy, and all this other bullcrap.
I don't know who you were thinking of. Marita, maybe?
Well, I was talking about the name of the mobile suit full frontal pilots.
Oh, Sinanju.
Sinanju. Alright, let me write this down real quick. So.
Well, I just looked it up. The fat guy's name is Alberto. He has no last name given.
Yeah. So anyway, say the Sinanju basically takes out the commander's MS, the Regzeal. Mm-hmm. And so apparently it's really down to Riddy out there. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that the Anaheim guy, the guy you just said just a few seconds ago, Alberto.
There you go.
God, this editing is going to be so hands on.
Don't
correct
worry
what I'm saying.
You don't
even I'm going to completely forget about it, anyways. But Alberto, like, pretty much clears it. They're like, oh, well, actually, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit because apparently we find out who Audrey really is, which is dun dun dun, Mineva Azabi.
Yes,
which is the last bloodline remaining daughter relative of the Azabi family after the 1 year war.
Mm-hmm. Also in Zeta Gundam and Double Zeta Gundam, if you haven't seen those, that is a character that appears in there as she's effectively the head of Neo Zeon the entire time, but Haman is acting. I mean, she's mostly a figurehead, and Haman is the
leader.
Mineva Azabi doesn't really appear in Double Zeta. That's an imposter.
I guess not.
She is in Zeta because it was like episode, I think, 30-something is when they meet with Neo Zeon to try to get an alliance with them between the Aeug, you know, with the Neo Zeon so they can fight the Titans at Grips. Mm-hmm. That's when Quattro, at the time, or Char, is meeting up with Mineva, and, you know, Mineva's like, oh, it's been so long and everything, right. And then him and Haman go at it.
Yeah.
So that's... Yeah, then they get confined and they break out apparently. So,
Right, and she's the daughter of Dozel Zabi, if you have forgotten. It was only very briefly mentioned in the first Gundam when Dozel was making his last stand at Solomon, I think?
Yeah,
no,
it was
before Solomon, that.
Yes.
Yeah, Solomon. He says to take his wife and daughter out from there to have them evacuate.
Yeah, he was defending Solomon with the Big Zom, and Slegger
yes.
basically castrated him with the eye field, and then Amuro took it from there.
Right. Yeah, so, yes, Mineva Zabi is Dozel Zabi's daughter and has been kind of a figurehead leader of Neo Zeon ever since the 1 year war. So, there you go.
I wasn't sure if Mineva Zabi was mentioned in 0083.
I don't think she was.
I thought Haman played like a minor.
Yeah, well, during 0083, Haman and most of Neo Zeon, or what would be Neo Zeon, was at the asteroid axis. And if you read the manga Shar's Deleted Affair, you'll see more of that. But they're basically in hiding that entire time, and the Delaz fleet is kind
yeah.
of the thing. They're not totally representative of the remaining Zeon soldiers.
Right.
Haman does show up in 0083, but I don't think Mineva does she?
I don't think so.
I think it is just Haman, but it's only for like a few seconds.
Yeah, it's just a cameo.
Yeah, I don't think she even has a line of dialogue or anything.
I don't remember.
Yeah. So apparently with, going back to the story,
mm-hmm.
Apparently Benazir goes into the deck and basically is... keeps saying that Mineva Zabi is basically Audrey. Mm-hmm. And like, he doesn't get it in his... it's like, I thought he didn't get it in his head, like, you know, like... because she's like, no, I'm actually a Mineva. And he's just, like, she's telling him this. He's like, no, you're Audrey. And he's just like... and I'm thinking, like, when I'm watching this, dude, you got lied to, and she's telling the truth right there. Like, if her name is Mineva, it's Mineva. Trust me.
I think that he doesn't... he either may not understand the implications of that, or he just doesn't care.
Yeah, I think he just wants to believe that it's Audrey, and that's what her
yeah.
name really should be. So that could be it. That's probably what it is.
Right.
He's known her for like one day, you know? You can get used to calling her a new name after one
yeah,
day.
But yeah, it's different for new types. They make connections like a lot.
Their love triangles are much different than ours. And I mean, if you look at my track record, like I don't know a girl's last name until like a month later, whether or not. So you know, changing the first name is kind of guys.
That's how Bruce Wayne rolls.
So,
all right. So, anyways, Alberto gets the Najra and the unicorn, and then and he goes out there to fight against the Shinjaku.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good, you know, you have herself a sweet MS battle, and of course, Lieutenant Angelo gets involved and starts like wigging out because he had to interfere.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, lo and behold, Marita comes out of nowhere, and at that point, she does. Give a good beat down to Benazir and the unicorn, and I guess that just knocks him out. So then they actually capture him and take him back to this this asteroid, mm-hmm. which is like an old, I guess, colony mining asteroid.
Yeah, I can trying to remember what the name of it is.
Our Palau. Listeners can look up online. Palau,
the resource satellite. Wow.
Yeah, it was a resource satellite. Okay. So yeah, he gets taken back. Yeah, so he gets taken back to the resource satellite, and then of course at the time we get a cutscene back to where we're at the ship, and Riddy is basically talking with Mineva, and pretty much like his whole deal is the fact that it was. I know I saw this a couple hours ago, but I'm trying to really think back. But he was upset, I guess, because it's like, you know, if you're the real Mineva Zabi, why are you here on the ship? You know, why are you doing the things you're doing, I guess? Because you're, you know, he's going to look at her history kind of like, you know, you're behind, you're the Zabi kid, you know, you've done all this bad stuff, or you're behind it, even though if you may or may not ever been part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that gets into the whole, this whole, again, I kind of halfway paid attention to this, but it was explaining basically the Federation corruption, and
right.
It kind of, to me, like, you know, regarding that, that, you know, the Federation in some way is supporting Neo Zeon to try to keep these conflicts alive. That was the way I took it. I could be completely wrong, but
right. Nope, that's right.
That is right. Okay.
They're kind of like allowing them to continue existing, and they're not wiping them out.
Well, yeah, it's like a necessary evil, sort of.
It benefits them to have one enemy still around, so that they can justify whatever they're spending on military stuff is, or their research into the new type destroyer system, or for all these other things.
Like what they used to create the Titans and all the other things they wanted to do back in earlier in the UC.
Yes. Yeah, it's exactly like that.
Yeah, because it was
Federation rules.
Yeah, I mean, anything of like an anti-Federation government or anything to oppress them, it'll find a way to start a war on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what happened in the 30 Bunch incident.
Right.
But yeah, that was the gas. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I haven't totally forgotten my Gundam history yet.
No. Yes. Despite everything that's happened since then, the Federation still has not changed all that much.
Yeah.
Even though the Titans no longer exist, I mean, they still do that sort of thing.
Yes. Yes. They're just not quite as blatantly open about it.
Which makes you wonder why Amuro and Bright would rejoin them, but I guess they didn't want asteroids being dropped on the Earth or anything, so...
I don't know if we've talked about this on an episode before. This is kind of getting slightly off topic, but it does relate to this, because there's a weird time gap between the end of Double Zeta and the beginning of Sharp's Counterattack, and a lot of things happen in that time that we're never given knowledge of, that we don't understand. And one of those is why Char takes the New Zealand leadership, and another one is, yeah, why do Amuro and Bright rejoin the Federation Londo Pell unit?
And,
is it just because of Char? Just because Char comes back that they join the Federation?
They may think it's their responsibility to defend the Earth from going into a nuclear winter, or they may just maybe Aug was dissolved and.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was. They were pretty much. They were pretty much allied with the Federation government by the end of Devil Zeta Gundam. They pretty much become one.
Yeah,
force against Neo Zeon.
In Double Zeta, it's apparent that they're the people in Aug are not big fans of the Federation. I mean, they have all those scenes with the Federation saying, "Well, let's not evacuate these cities that are going to get wiped out. Let's it's just less people on the Earth. It'll be fine." You know, I mean, they make it clear that the Federation is not someone that. They think very highly of, and Aug mm-hmm. still, even though they're working with them to eradicate the second, or the first Neo Zeon revival mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, they're on the Earth, they got some hills to hide behind of, I think it's okay.
Yeah, so even with all the stuff that we know in Gundam and all the side stories there are still a lot of mysteries about certain things in certain time periods, and one of them is between, I think, 0088 and 0093 is a pretty big mystery.
I'm glad that they're making these OVAs. I mean, I would like it if they did another one like 5 years earlier or whatever, right before,
yeah.
I don't know, 0090 or sometime like that.
Yeah.
That would explain... like how Char took the leadership and all the other things you mentioned that were never really explained.
And then, of course, like, I mean, he survived the fight with Haman at the end of Zeta Gundam, because it, you know, it showed his Yakushiki, the mm-hmm. cockpit being open, which means he got it out of there somehow.
Right.
And then, of course, he doesn't show up till four or five years later. Mm-hmm. And by then, he's like, you know, on top of the freaking Neo Zeon world, but. So you gotta wonder exactly what really happened during that time, and especially with Brighton and Amuro too.
Yeah. Yep. So there's always room for more side stories. I think there's it's still a very rich timeline that can be. You can put a story in a lot of different areas and have pretty much free reign to do whatever you want. And this is one of them. Sure. Right after Char's counterattack, we don't really know a whole lot of what happens up until. Gundam F91, which is like 40 years later.
Yeah, 30 or so. It's some around that time, 30 or 40 years later. Then of course, Victor Gundam is like another 30 years.
Yeah,
I think F-91 is in 0123, and I think Victory is in 0153.
Oh, yeah. There
you
go.
That's it.
And
I mean, there's one thing I've heard about Gundam is the fact that, like, there's a lot of, I guess there's a lot of fans that are like, well, I'm so tired of the UC era, you know, and, you know, there's everyone's always focused on the UC era because there's so much there to go on. There's all this unfinished plots and these, like, back histories to everything that, you know, we really haven't gotten full explanation yet.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I'm still a really big UC fan.
Yes.
And I like, I mean, especially we bring up good points, you know, regarding, you know, what happened, especially with, you know, with Char and the 5 years between the end of Zeta and, of course, the beginning of Char's counterattacks. It's like, you know, what really happened there?
Like, right. And you have to wonder what got him from working with Ayuk and everything to becoming so radical as to, you know, want to make Earth uninhabitable and everything, you know? It sort of makes sense as a development of his character, but it'd be nice if we got another show or an OVA at least, or a movie or something that would explain it.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, like, and of course, like, you know, after Char's counterattack and Unicorn, we, you know, the Federation by the time of F-91 and Victory Gundam are starting to weaken. So it's kind of, I mean, yeah, granted, no power lasts, you know, nothing lasts forever, especially for powers and everything, and nations and governments and stuff like that. But you got to wonder what was the progression of, you know, I guess what they did and their own corruption that would have caused them to be that weak by the time Victory Gundam happened.
Right. And so there's the Federation is a total non-factor by that time, which I think is pretty great. But as for why Char joined Ayuk and stuff, I think they tried to address that in Char's Leaving the Fair, but I don't know, without mentioning, you know, Zionic Corps and all that crap. I hope that we get to read the end of that in English at some point. I think that may get into that, because you see that in his, pretty much on his team in Axis is I can't remember their names, but his
Alberto and Appley.
Roberto and Appley. So I mean, obviously they join AU together with some purpose, either of infiltration or because they actually honestly believe that, and then in the end they come to honestly believe that and fight for AU. So
why would they
hopefully we see that at some point.
Why would they be infiltrating? I mean, they hate the Earth Federation as much as anyone.
I know. They just didn't want an outright alliance between Ayuk and Neosian, I guess. And I don't know. I can't. Like I said, I don't know. I'm just guessing.
This is another thing. I mean, how closely involved with Neosian was Quattro in, you know, this before the start of Zeta Gundam, you know, like obviously he was on Axis, but I mean, was he I don't know, they probably show his fallout with Haman in CDA, but I mean, I don't think Charge Deleted Affairs ever can get fully translated here, and definitely not officially. I mean,
it doesn't sound like it. Yeah, and with Tokyo Pop gone, there's very little chance.
Yeah, good chance with that, unless Bandai of America wants to release the manga of that, which, again, fat chance, but...
Fat chance, they do release manga now.
Yeah.
None of the Universal Century manga, but they were releasing a lot of the 00 manga.
Wow. That's different, you know?
I know, it's different, but I'm saying that there's a possibility that they could eventually get into that at some point.
There's a lot
Read regarding, like, the whole backstory of Char. I just kind of skimmed through a whole Wikipedia article on Char's novel. So I think you're gonna find most of your answers there. What we just kind of discussed. So,
well,
I hope, well, I hope
some
we get
of
to
the stuff that's been revealed. But I mean, there's always more. You know, I mean,
there is always more. But
who was he before the 1 year war? You know, I mean, you can always find more that could be revealed about him. He's a really deep character and everything.
I'd recommend Gundam the Origin if you want to find out about more of what Char did before the 1 year war and how he got into the Zeon Military Academy. Also in the Gundam novels, they also address that as well. The original novel trilogy by Tomino, they kind of talk about that.
The ones that Josh was skimming through?
Yeah.
Wait, no. No, that wasn't what I was skimming through. Did you mean the novels?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I thought we were still talking about the origin.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, though, in the origin, they show that that he takes the name of Charasmal from some other cadet in the Zeon Military Academy. And
yeah, I just read that off Wiki, so I cheated.
Yeah, that was being translated by Viz when they dropped it, and I think some other my friend Redtail is working on translating that with some other fan translation group, not Zionic Court, but some other people that actually want to work on this stuff, I guess. So there's a good chance we may be able to see the end of that translation.
Did show. Zionic Court have that picked up at one point too?
We were planning on doing it, and then nothing ever came of it, and nothing ever got actually released. But we did start on that, yeah.
It's not going to happen now.
No, I do not think it will happen now.
He doesn't need another project anyway.
He's not even going to finish the ones that he has started, so yeah, that's not going to happen. But yeah, hopefully we will get to see again in the origin more of that in English soon. Unofficially.
I was going to say, I hate to say this, but I think we should sort of get back on topic, maybe.
Okay. One last question. Are the Viz graphic novels hard to find?
Yes. You're pretty much going to have to go on eBay to get those.
Are they expensive?
Not particularly. They were, they're not, I have some of them, and they're not like typical graphic novels. They're more of like a comic book size. Like, I don't know what the dimensions are, but they're physically larger, but they're a lot shorter too. They're only like I don't remember, but a lot shorter than a regular graphic novel, and then parts of it are in color too,
isn't it?
So that's why it costs as much as a regular.
Was it in color in Japan, or did Viz colorize it?
No, it was in color in Gundam Ace.
But there's six volumes that they translated, right? But they cut it up into 12 because they cut each one in half.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember exactly how that goes, but yeah, they don't line up to the Japanese graphic novels.
Because there's a comic store in Austin that I go to sometimes that has a decent amount of Gundam stuff, and it's like that. It's like the size of a normal comic, but it's like thicker, and I think it may or may not be flipped. I can't remember. But
No, it's not.
It's not flipped?
No.
Okay, well, that's good. So
if you can find those, then definitely go for it.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Anyway, I guess we should be getting back to Unicorn. Do you have anything more to say about that, Ziani?
We're just about done. All right.
Oh.
So we have maybe 15, 20 minutes left of the episode. But what happens is that Benazir goes to meet up with Full Frontal and is introduced to him, and of course that whiny assistant of his, Lieutenant Angelo, and basically him and Benatra have a pretty good discussion. You know, Rolf Fonto's like, you know, you should sit down and have some of that tea right there and have this, you know, nice conversation about war and politics. And then it is revealed that you know, he's wanted to, you know, offer his, you know, be generous to Benatra and everything, and Benatra's like, you know, hey, would it be okay if you can take off your mask? And Lieutenant Angelo is having a fit because, you know, how dare he question the great Full Frontal? And then, of course, it's funny because Full Frontal is just like, Angelo, shut up, all right? We have a guest. Can't you see? It's like, go in the corner if you're going to act that way. But, so he takes off his mask, and pretty much we are introduced to Full Frontal, who would, you could almost say, maybe he is, maybe he isn't Charasnable.
Yep.
But he's got the scar, he's got obviously longer hair, and then of course that, I guess that gives Bernard enough, you know, faith, and, you know, I guess enough to, for him to shake his hand on that. Mm-hmm. And so they get into more of a discussion regarding war and everything, and then you know, Benazir states, you know, hey, I'm no murderer, I don't believe it's right for, you know, for us to go killing people. And then Angelo completely like smacks him against the wall, which I would not have taken that from that kid. I'm sorry, I would have kicked him square across the room if it was me.
Benazir or Angelo?
Oh, Angelo, I mean.
Oh, okay. Well, I can understand Angelo. I can understand Angelo's actions at that point, because Benazir is just clearly bullshit.
Yeah, but
that's how
blame Angelo for his reaction.
Yeah, but I mean, Full Frontal is kind of like, you know, he was just, again, he's telling Angelo to shut up,
uh-huh.
And basically saying, you know, when he was piling into the, you know, because apparently, the Unicorn did kill one of their teammates. And, you know, Full Frontal, or Char, is basically stating, you know, maybe he didn't know what he was doing in the suit. You know, he was trying, he was kind of in a way defending him on that. You know, he was just like, you know, all he was doing is reacting on instinct, because when you're in the battlefield, if you want to survive, that happens, of course, right. If you want to live. Mm-hmm. And so apparently, the course to take Benazir away, which I guess the ultimate form of punishment is to go to Merida's house for dinner with her folks.
They treat prisoners really nicely in Xenon.
Yeah, this is actually pretty interesting, because we were introduced to Merida's family. Our should I say, from what I found out, we'll say step-family for the time.
Right, adopted family.
Adopted family, so to speak. And basically, it's kind of a gather dinner table, and there's a kid running around, which Merida, I guess, is a typical, you know, Winston at dinner when you have to hang a kid behind their ankles to give it to their mom. Yeah, she starts climbing up Merida, and she just, like, grabs him by the ankles and just hands it to her mom without saying anything.
Yeah.
Like, typical Tuesday night lasagna leftover dinner.
I really like the little things like that just go on in the background. I thought that was
That was funny. And of course, you know, Benazir's kind of staying his stance on war and what he thinks, and you know, with the kid who's, you know, obviously, you know, with Xeon and everything, and he, you know, with regarding what Benazir says, gets the kid to cry,
right,
and kind of be remorseful of like what real war really is.
Right. And the whole time, Mr. Gilboa is just like, don't argue with him, kid. Just let it go, you know, exactly what Full Frontal is doing.
Even though that guy is the reason the kid thinks like that, you know?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's grown up in a Xeon environment on that, you know, in that place. So, like, that's kind of what he knows. And, you know, again, if you're a kid growing up in that kind of environment, that's what you know. And hearing it from another perspective in a way you've never really been taught is going to affect you.
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of good for that kid to open his eyes like that.
Yeah.
But, I also kind of thought of something funny too, where, like, I guess in a typical maybe funny way, like, you know, Merida could have brought Banager home, and it's kind of like, oh, she didn't shoot you down. She always shoots down her, you know, these boys of hers that she likes in battle. She can never bring a boy home because she keeps killing them. It's like, mom, shut up. That's what I would imagine the family dinner to be like, but they're just kind of pretty quiet and tame.
Right. They may have been nervous around Benazir, and that's why
that could have been it too. But I think the normal family discussion is like, you know, why don't you ever bring a boy home? And she's like, you keep shooting him down all the time. You're never gonna get married. You're never gonna have to kick your boyfriends down. And she's like, mom, shut up.
That'd be pretty funny.
I'd say that might be the typical dinner evening, I guess. But during the conversation, Merida says, you know, hey, get your coat. I got to take you somewhere. Mm-hmm. And takes him to, like, I guess this old chapel in the asteroid. And they have a discussion regarding people that migrate to space and, I guess, starting a new religion. That's what I got out of it.
Kind of. I think that more relates to, I would say, what the Soviet, when the Soviet space program was running in the 60s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first astronaut they sent up, Yuri Gagarin. It was Yuri's night a couple of weeks ago, by the way. It was like the 60th anniversary from going into space. He used to say, because of the Soviet, you know, atheist government, that when he went into space, that there was no God there. And that's pretty much what Merida was paraphrasing there. And when people went into space, they expected God and found nothing. So they had to create their own, not religion so much, just kind of like a,
their own version of God, or
it's like their own belief system, really, of something to, you know, something to believe in. I don't know how else to phrase it, but that's what it ended up becoming.
And this is to take the Soviet analogy farther. I mean, this is sort of what happens in countries like the Soviet Union. You know, you have a, you know, cult around the country, you know,
right,
as opposed to around a mythical figure or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's not a religion, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, the way they treated
Joseph
Stalin.
It just replaces the belief in a god with a belief in something else, and in Xeon, it's the belief of Spacenoid, basically.
Yeah, Spacenoid.
Superiority because they're not bound by gravity, their insights are greater, and they're evolving somewhat. And that leads into new types and stuff, which is prophesied by Xeon Tycoon.
And the thing about that is that they're right, though. I mean,
yeah, when I compared it to the Soviets, I didn't want to make it seem more negative or anything, because I think I'm a big fan of Xeon. I think everyone knows that, but I'm not. When I was comparing to Soviets, I didn't mean it in a negative.
Zig Xeon.
Yes, Zig Xeon.
Zig Xeon.
But I mean, the thing about that is that even though Xeon's ideals are probably more noble than the Federation's ideals, Xeon is almost always the antagonist in the shows because of their, you know, corrupt leaders or whatever, and right. You know, it makes you wonder. It's not like it's just black and white, and that's one of the reasons Mobile Suit Gundam was such an innovative show, is because it's not just the good guys versus the evil forces of death or whatever, you know.
Exactly.
The Xeons have their good side, and then they also have the Zombies, which is
the political family that's steering Xeon towards their own.
Yeah, that twisted the views of Xeon Daikun to their own bidding.
But after they freaking killed him.
But even
Xeon, yeah.
But even Char, I mean, people at Char's counterattack, and they're not going to say, he should have made the Earth uninhabitable. Very few people are going to watch that and think think he's noble, but he's usually considered the more reasonable Xeon soldier. So I mean, there's everyone has their own problems. Everyone in leadership in Xeon.
Yeah, why Gundam was so different and so successful is because no other shows were doing that at the time. Having no really, well, there are clear bad guys in Gundam, but there's no clear bad side. There are good people in Xeon and there are bad people in the Federation, and that's established really early on in Mobile Suit Gundam, and keeps coming up over and over again. And that's why Gundam was so different, because no other shows were doing stuff like that, where things were blatantly good versus evil.
For example, the other mecha anime at the time would have like the evil space invaders want to kill every human, you know. It's much less sophisticated in terms of who's good, who's bad, and all that.
Right. So, I think that's pretty much the end of the episode, right?
Pretty much. I mean, other than that, our pretty boy Rat Riddy is going to break out Beneva,
right?
And they're working on that. And then, of course, when Behringer was in the streets with Marita, heading back to her place or whatever, there's a guy that bumped into him, gave him a note, right. And like I guess like a little like indicator or something. But basically, on the note was a digitalized map of saying, "Go here if you want to leave, because we're taking over this place in the next episode, and if you want to get out of here alive." You got to go this way. So
don't go to this part of the asteroid. That part's about to blow up. Go over here.
Yeah. that area is going down. So
yeah.
Crap will happen. You don't need to be over there.
Did you also notice during that scene where Banagher's walking through town that there is a bar called the Black Tristars? Not so subtle reference to first kind of in that scene. And there was another one too. I can't remember what it was. It was something like that.
I know there was like a couple bar names I noticed, but nothing like that just clicked with me like that.
Oh yeah, one of them was called the Black Tricers. So that was cool. And then I think that's the end of the episode, right?
Yep. That's pretty much the end of the episode. Yeah, he gets the map and then he looks at it and it was like the credits roll. So
I haven't watched it in a while as well. The memory's not that great. Yeah,
we've got 6 minutes left until it's an hour long, but I guess we could just, I don't know.
Well, there's one more thing that I wanted to talk about, because last week I mentioned Laplace's box and the mystery and, you know, basically how that's like a central, you know, something central to the story, but we're not explaining what it is. A few days ago, I was reading on Wikipedia various things about determinism and free will and all that, and I came across something called Laplace's demon, and it's related to Pierre Simon Laplace, who's what Laplace's box is named after, I assume. And he was an associate of Joseph Louis Lagrange, who the Lagrange points are named after. And that's that's something that that's an actual science. I don't know. This may not be clear to anyone who's never taken astronomy or something, but there actually are Lagrange points
where
where the gravity would be ideal to put some kind of structure there, like a space colony or something. So actual scientific term, Lagrange point.
Wait, what was Laplace's what was the real thing?
Laplace's demon. So
and what is it? What is
it? I'm gonna explain. It's a thought experiment that he came up with that said if there was some kind of creature, and he didn't call it a demon, for someone else attributed that name later on, but I think what he meant of it was something more like a computer or some kind of super intelligent entity that could at one instant be able to be aware of all the atoms in the universe, then it would be able to predict time in both directions, backwards and forwards, predict everything that's ever happened and everything that ever will happen if it knew the location of all the atoms in the universe. So I think that the whatever's in Laplace's box, it has something to do with predicting the future and something to do with new types. So I assume that's why it's named after this, but we'll see. We'll see what it is. But I thought that was interesting because I didn't know that when I was watching this show the first time. I'd never heard of that theory before.
From what I can tell, they kept saying it could destroy the Federation. I mean, if what's in Laplace's box is... what would determine everything that happens in the future and so on. I mean, it seems like if it's some sort of thing that can affect everything, then, Zeon could simply will the Federation out of existence or whatever, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so the Federation's trying to stop that from happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be something that predicts the future, or it could be, because it's something, part of this theory is that it works both ways, that if you see all the atoms in the universe, you could see everything that has happened. Their movement up until and even in this future. So it could be something that predicts the future, or it could just be a really detailed record of the past, like what really happened in UC-001 or something like that. So that's I think it had something to do with either predicting the future or some really detailed record of the past. That's why I think it's named after Laplace's demon.
Hmm.
Well, so we'll see.
I have to read about Laplace's demon.
It's pretty interesting. This was a guy that lived in the 1700s, I think. So it's kind of there have been scientific advancements since there that would suggest that such a computer could not possibly exist. Like that's just too much data for one thing to handle.
Hmm. But I don't see how something can predict what. I mean, scientifically, like how it can predict what will or will not happen in the future. I mean,
From
a non-theological standpoint, I mean, if people have their own free will, how is such a thing possible, you know?
Well, he did not believe in free will.
Oh,
he was a proponent of determinism. So he was saying if you could see how all the atoms are moving, then you could then predict, based on their past actions and their current actions, what is going to happen after that.
And those atoms include, like, the atoms in people's brains, and you can predict their psychology and how they're going to... Like, whether they're going to cross this street or not, or, like, everything. I mean, there's so many details in everyday life for every single person. It's so hard to imagine something that could predict everything ever.
Yeah, I don't know if it really had anything to do with the mind. But his you know, the whole thing about determinism is that there's really only one future. And if you think that you have free will, that's pretty much just an illusion. There only one thing will happen, you know, in the end.
And this is, I assume Laplace was a Christian who believed that God decided everything in advance?
I would say no, because he's a scientist, he's a mathematician, and all of his work included, like, you know, what now it would be quantum mechanics, but back then that was before they knew, like, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle or anything like that. So it was before... I would assume that he's not a Christian. Determinism and predestination are different things. You can believe in determinism without thinking that it's like has anything to do with God or anything.
Wow.
So
that's
I don't know. I just barely researched that, but I thought that was interesting, and I thought that whatever's in Laplace's box probably has something to do with that because that's what it's named after, I assume.
We're just about out of time. So that's it for this episode. Tune in next week, and we'll have.
Wait, what about the closing remarks?
Oh yeah, that's we right. Those
closing remarks. Vima and Josh.
Zig Zion.
Okay, Zionic.
Cut the mullet.
I disagree. That's my closing remark. Viku.
The unicorn psycho frame is made out of people!
Aviator. Aviator, are you there?
I'm half awake, half asleep, thinking about what to do. Sorry I didn't talk much.
Oh, okay. It's all good. Well, goodbye, everyone. Ron Paul for president.
Do something about your long, filthy hair. It looks like a rat's nest. Do something about your mullet. Get out the hair clippers, jerk.
Cut the mullet. Cut the mullet. Cut the mullet. Cut the mullet.
Get the rat's nest off your head. Get that crazy-ass mullet off your skull. Take your ass to the barber shop. Tell the barber that you're sick of looking like an asshole.
Cut the mullet. Cut the mullet.